Well, this is as close as I could get to Labor Day to do a Labor Day sermon and talking about the meaning of work. And I am filled in trying to prepare a sermon that reflects on work and Labor Day, on the compelling ironies that abound, that we celebrate Labor Day and we are a society that does not respect labor. We don't respect labor unions as organizations. We have accepted the stereotype of fat cat corrupt union bosses, and I'm sure that there might be a couple of fat cat union bosses. There are probably a couple of fat cat Unitarian minister bosses too, but that's not the reality of the union movement. We don't respect the union movement. We look often, and by we I mean our society, as people only interested in themselves, not interested in our society, and we don't see that they are interested in raising the level and the fairness for everyone. And they get attacked, and the public gets sidetracked with the side issues, even as the health care debate gets sidetracked on side issues that are not germane to the heart of the issue of how do we treat human beings? How do we treat human beings who work for a living? We don't respect the unions, partially because we don't respect the labor. As a society, we are interested in money. I understand that. We are interested in comfort. I understand that. And most of us do not aspire for our children to do manual labor. And I understand that also. But it doesn't mean that we disrespect or have to disrespect and treat disrespectfully, therefore, the people who work with their hands, the people who actually build things, not the people who push the paper alone, although paper pushing, I'm sure, is a good aerobic exercise, not simply the people who dream of ways of exchanging vaporware across the internet. It's very entertaining. I get 6,000 links and silly videos a day. I respect the work that goes into all of that. But we don't respect the people who actually make things. This is a huge change in how human beings have gotten meaning in our lives. We used to get meaning as human beings in other times and other societies by making things, by building things, by being able to say, I built that, I crafted that. Part of my energy, my soul, my creativity is in that product. Today, because we push papers and send electrons all around the world, that's not how we get our sense of meaning. We get our sense of meaning not from making things, but from consuming things. That's a big change, and in some ways, I think a tragic change and a dead end, because it sucks the values out of what we do during our days. And it sucks away a sense of respect for the people who do hard work. It is illustrative that during this financial crisis that happened this year, some of you may have noticed it, that when they were talking about bailing out the banks and the financial institutions, it was, well, yeah, we got to do that or everything will crash. When it came to bailing out Rust Belt industries, the people and the industries that actually made cars and trains and planes, it was, well, you know, we need to have some harsh social Darwinism here because those people made bad choices. The banks didn't. Now, I'm not arguing for stimulus versus non-stimulus. This is not a political sermon. You may figure out a way to make it political, but it's not meant to be a political sermon. The line that was used during the bailout, I think, is incredibly accurate, and that is, we were eager to bail out people who took showers before going to work, but not people who had to take showers after they finished their shift. This is devaluing a huge segment of our society and of the world. And it is a lack of respect and an inability to see the full humanity and understand how our society works and how we are related one to another. And it's a shame. It's a dead end to try to get our sense of meaning from simply consuming things. We get only the symbols of status and not a real payoff of status. So now that we get our identity from buying the Cadillac and not making the Cadillac, what happens to us as we chase status around through our lives? I would suggest that it's often an empty and unsatisfying pursuit that does not fill us, that the creativity that used to be in our work lives has been shifted to our consumer lives, which also means in this society it has been shifted to our debtor lives. No wonder some Unitarians even are saying, yes, and forgive our debtors and forgive us our debts, because that would be really nice. However, it would take an act of God to do. And we've gone into this pit We've gone into this pit along with a whole society that has lost track of how to put creativity and a sense of spiritual value into our lives. Too easily we understand work as trading our time by doing something we really don't want to do for money so that we can buy things that we really don't need. This is not a new problem. This is what Ecclesiastes was writing about arguably 2,800 years ago. It is a vain chasing after wind because it doesn't fulfill. I think it's one of the reasons that people often try to find hobbies and crafts to put some sense of soul, some sense of creativity into what they do with their lives. Why some people paint, why some people sing, why some people write, while some people mold and create sculptures. We want to have some sense of creativity. Now, I don't think that we have to understand work as simply exchanging our time doing something we don't want to do for money. There's a lot of real work that we can do as human beings. There's a lot of real work that can fill our souls. A lot of real work that goes beyond the issue of simply a job, a project, going someplace we don't want to be and doing something we don't want to do. I think most people do not see what seems to me to be something clear. That if we want to create art, our lives can be that art. That what we do with our lives, not simply at a workplace, but what we do seriously, what we do creatively, what we do with intention and concentration can create art. And it's not related necessarily to pay or to recognition. Aristotle, when writing on this subject, talked about virtue, arete. And he said the virtue for the artist does not reside in whether the artist works in gold or in silver or in marble or in wood or in clay. The virtue is in the work, not in the material. It is doing what is given to us to do, Ecclesiastes quote, with as much enthusiasm and concentration and goodwill as possible. It's finding a way to do something with our time, to do something with our hands, to do something with our hearts that makes a difference, that doesn't simply nourish us with money, but nourishes us at a deeper and more spiritual value. But what do we do if what we do during the day may seem silly? I think we can still cry out in rage against that kind of life, and hope to be nourished in another room, but maybe not in another life, maybe in this life. But it's a good example. What's more important than taking and caring for a crying baby? What's more important in what we do than how we love individual peoples and nourish them? What's more nourishing to our souls than to nourish others? And I can't think of anything. Some work may seem important, some work may seem trivial, but all work that can potentially use us creatively deserves the same attention. The wonderful Catholic novelist Graham Greene divided his works into novels. Those were the important things he had to say. And entertainments. Those were the fun things that he had to say that got made into movies. He got paid better for the entertainments. The same work, the same craft, the same attention went into both. I wasn't sure about whether to use this example, but when I used to write fiction for television, I had and these were days before computers, I had a script service that used to type it up, and I'd write a decent show, and my typist would say, "John, that was really good. I really enjoyed that." And I wrote a Chips. And you remember Chips? You're too embarrassed to nod and say yes, aren't you? I understand. If I say ditto, no one's going to look at me like they understand what I'm saying. She looks up at me and said, "You're getting paid for this garbage?" But I worked as hard on the garbage as I did on the good stuff. But I knew it was garbage. But damn it, I wanted to make it good garbage. I'm serious about this. I write a lot of stuff. I write a lot of sermons. I write a lot of op-ed pieces for three newspapers. I write some stuff that's serious, some that's middle brow, some that I think is funny. Responsible opposing points of view may not think so. And stuff that I know is lightweight, throwaway fluff. I work as hard on the fluff. I feel as good about creating something, even if it isn't important. It was important because it took my attention and my energy, and I did my best. And what I'm suggesting to you is to see the world and to see our lives as creative, as makers of art, to see the world as clay. Not completely amenable to our every action and creative impulse, but yet responsive. We mold a shape of shape, as our hymn goes, to a shape of justice. The clay may not hold its shape. We might have to return and reshape it again and again and again. But we want to give our lives and our world some shape of justice. So if in your work life it doesn't have the most creative opportunities, then think about the rest of your lives and our lives and how the world becomes our clay. The world becomes our canvas. Our actions and our choices and our hearts finding expressions in our hands work to make a difference. To make something beautiful, to make something good, to make something better. Maybe it's sometimes to stop something bad, to ameliorate something that is already bad. But we, all of us, have endless opportunities to make a difference in the world through our work. But we have to understand our work not simply as the exchange of our time for something we don't want to do, but the calling of our lives, the legacy that we build, that each of us builds to the future, whether for our own children and grandchildren or all of the children and grandchildren out there in the world. Our lives, how we spend them, what we choose to do, what we choose to retreat from, all of these things make a difference in what tomorrow will be. That we are called back to reshape the clay is not a tragedy. The only tragedy is if we give up. Honor work. Honor the works of others as they build the things that we use and consume, as they grow the crops that nourish us, as they harvest the crops that nourish them. Respect their work. See their humanity. Know that our lives are impossible without them. And know that that gives us strength and choices that take their lives and their work, and we can carry them on and translate them and magnify them into something that will not simply nourish the world, but will nourish our souls and nourish ourselves.